around the world to around the block. This is a 77-second news update from the RSESolutions.com news desk.
I am Frank Morano. Vice President Kamala Harris is off on her first foreign trip. She's set to meet with Guatemala's president today. Harris is in Central America to address the root causes behind mass migration to the United States. The trip got off to a bumpy start as the vice president's plane was forced to return to Joint Base Andrews yesterday because of a technical issue. Three people are dead and six more are hurt after a mass shooting late Saturday night outside Miami. Police say it happened after a graduation party in Kendall, Florida. Two men and a woman are dead, while three other men and three women were hurt when gunfire erupted. No arrests have yet been made. NASA's new chief plans in his first month in office to study unidentified flying objects cited by the U.S. Navy. Former Florida senator and astronaut Bill Nelson tells CNN Business nobody knows what the high-speed objects observed by Navy pilots actually are. A Pentagon report expected to be released this month apparently found no evidence that UFOs are alien spacecraft, but investigators don't know what those objects might be. The hacker collective known as Anonymous is accusing Tesla and SpaceX founder Elon Musk of destroying lives with his tweets about cryptocurrencies. In a video posted over the weekend, a group claiming to represent Anonymous called Musk another narcissistic rich dude who's desperate for attention and constantly trolling crypto markets. An actress known for her roles in Gone Girl and Cocktail is in the hospital after a hit-and-run accident. Lisa Barnes is in critical condition at Mount Sinai Morningside Hospital. The 65-year-old was crossing the street in New York City's Upper West Side Friday when someone on a motorized bike or scooter ran a red light and hit her. Boxing legend Floyd Mayweather Jr. and social media star Logan Paul put on a show during their exhibition bout in Miami. The two clashed for the full eight rounds at Hard Rock Stadium. Mayweather landed 40% of his total strikes to just 13% for Paul. Mayweather said of Paul after the fight, "He's better than I thought he was." That's your 77-second news update from the RSESolutions.com news desk, where Mark Arzamanian will put you to work. I'm Frank Moreno on 77 WABC. Traffic and transit is not traffic and transit. The other side of midnight is straight ahead.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Brian Kilmeade. Entertaining and informative.
Listen, I'm not going to recommend anything to you. I'm taking it. In 2 seconds, if you ask me, I'm taking it. To me, it's the way out of it. And then if Southwest Airlines or United Airlines or American says you can only fly with it, or if you want to go see Thomas Rhett concert and they say the only people that can go in are people who are vaccinated because I can't get insurance because of it, just know those are the ramifications, and no one's being punitive. They're just being practical.
Brian Kilmeade, weekdays 10 to noon after Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Numbers mean much to me because of prostate cancer. I'm Johnny Braggs, the number two, for my stepfather who died of prostate cancer, and my uncle who suffered so much after prostate cancer surgery. The number 15, 15 years since Dr. Lederman's successful treatment of my prostate cancer. The number zero, which is my PSA, zero, after Dr. Lederman's successful prostate cancer treatment, what every man wants. The numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, important for every man with prostate cancer. 1, getting the most successful treatment. 2, avoiding radical robotic surgery. 3, keeping sexual function. 4, maintaining urinary control. Call my Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES, 212-CHOICES, to consider his prostate cancer treatment for you. Most insurances, Medicare, Medicaid, accepted. 1384 Broadway at 38th. Call 212-CHOICES for prostate cancer treatment. Call Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES. I'm glad I did. You'll be number one with Dr. Lederman.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
I'm not tired yet.
It's Monday. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. And yesterday was the 77th anniversary of one of the most remarkable achievements in the history of not only American history, but in the history of human civilization. I'm talking, of course, about D-Day. You want to talk about something that, if it would have gone differently, would have altered the entire course of human history. That's what we're saying about D-Day. And I thought it might be appropriate to look back at the importance of exactly what transpired there and tell you some information that you might not know about it. Here to guide us through what happened 77 years ago is one of my favorite historians, David Piatruzza. He's also a terrific author. He's written a lot of great history books. We'll mention a couple of them throughout the hour, and he's somebody that I turn to all the time when looking back at analyzing historical events. David, thank you for getting up early for us.
Oh, no problem. I'm up. I'm ready to go.
So, David, most of the people in our audience are not going to remember D-Day and what happened 77 years ago. Before we get into D-Day itself and the invasion and what happened, set the stage for us. Where was World War II at that point in June 6th? What was going on at that point in the war? How did it look for both sides?
Well, I think at that point, Allied victory was a given. But, you know, the Nazis being fanatical, they weren't about to give up at all. They were, you know, brainwashed, really, under the mesmerized by Hitler. And there was, so the fighting was going on since 1941 in Russia. The Russians were moving the Germans back, but at a terrific cost. They're going to lose 20 million people in the war. In the Pacific, again, we've turned the tide. Midway was in, I think it was in 1942, so we've been moving them back. But, you know, it's going to take two atomic bombs to convince them to give up. On the European front, after a tough fight, the Allies had finally pushed the Axis powers, Italy and Japan and Germany, out of North Africa. Tobruk was the big battle there. And then we moved on to, well, a second front. The German, or the Stalin, is pressing the Western Allies for this so-called second front. He wants it in France. Roosevelt wants it in France. Churchill is very nervous about that. He's seen how the fighting in France could go in World War One, which is trench warfare and fighting for every, not just every mile, but for every yard of French soil, and the tremendous casualties that occurred, like in the Battle of the Somme. So is that a good play to him? He has to be convinced. And so he wants to strike at the soft underbelly of Europe, which involves an invasion of Sicily and then an invasion of the Italian boot. The Italians are knocked out of the war at that time, right about, I think it's the day before D-Day. Italy finally surrenders. Rome is taken, rather. And so you've got movement there, but, you know, we're not going to take all of Italy at all, even before the end of the war. It's that tough a battle. So where do you come into France? And that's the issue.
All right. And so then the invasion itself, why is this such a big deal? What makes this particular D-Day invasion different from other invasions that might have taken place in World War II and in other battles and other wars?
Well, it's just so much more heavily defended. The Germans have created this Atlantic Wall. This is the idea of Hitler, that you are going to protect the entire western coast of Europe. And he does it, you know, only, you know, a quarter of the German army is sitting there from Norway all the way to the Spanish border through France, the Low Countries, to protect against an Allied invasion. These are people who could be fighting on the Soviet Eastern Front. They could be fighting in the Balkans. They could be fighting in Italy. But they're pinned down there. And he has his troops there, and he, in 1943, late 1943, he takes one of Germany's best commanders, Erwin Rommel, puts him as the inspector and ultimately head of Army Group B to make sure that an Allied invasion is going to be stopped. Now, what does he do? He's going to utilize the troops. He wants to stop them at the beach. He says this thing has to be won in the first 24 hours, and he says this will be the longest day. He's the guy who coins that phrase. It's not the book. It's the general. And he spends the months leading up to D-Day mining the beaches with millions of mines, putting up these Czech barriers, these sort of Czech hedgehogs, these metal barriers to stop tanks, mining one thing after another, flooding the areas behind the fortifications to make this as difficult as and impossible for the Allies. Now, what happens if they fail? Obviously, if they fail, a lot of people are going to get killed. But if they fail, the Allies are not going to be able to just, oh, let's do this next weekend, okay? It could be put off for another year. And then you've got those 1.5 million German soldiers, and they could be shifted to those fronts, and they could make a tremendous difference on any one of them. So it's going to cost not only the lives of the men on the beaches, but it's going to cost people on the other fronts, the civilians, not just the military is being killed in this war, but the civilian cost in terms of the Holocaust, in terms of the bombings. This is just immense and unprecedented in human existence.
How long did the battle or battles that took place on D-Day actually last?
The battles on D-Day... Well, it's going on forever, and of course the battles are going on all the way to the end of VE Day, victory in Europe. But they start in the early. They start actually the night before with paratroop drops. You have 20,000. Now, people, we think about the beaches. We say there's 153,000 men who land on D-Day, but only about 120,000 really land on the beaches, 130,000. Another 20,000 land behind enemy lines. They're either paratroopers, they're parachuting in, or they are landing on gliders with the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions. So they're coming in early, and then when the sun rises, then you have this absolutely immense armada of 6,330 ships, 120 warships, 3,500 troop carriers, 500 cargo carriers, 600 specialty craft. They're all coming in, and they're coming in thanks to the presence of boats, which really don't get a lot of credit in this, but 250 minesweepers. You've got to clear a path before our men can get into the beaches. So it's going to last all the way through the night. And then, you know, our objectives. Okay, it's a tremendous victory, except now what are the specific goals for D-Day itself? It's to seize four major cities or towns in back of the five beaches on which we land, and in fact, we seize none of them. And when I say we, I mean the Americans who land at two beaches, the British who land at two beaches, the Canadians who land at the fifth beach, and to link up these five bridgeheads, these landing zones, and we don't do that either. So it's the Germans make an incredible amount of mistakes in terms of intelligence and deciding what to do once they know an invasion is coming in the Normandy area, and yet they put up a hell of a fight, a hell of a fight.
We're talking with David Piatruzza, noted historian and an author and an expert in the D-Day invasion. If you want to call in with a question, we will take your calls. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. David, who were the key organizers of the Allied effort at D-Day? Who were the main architects? We've heard a lot about some of these names in history over the course of the last 77 years, but some names we may not have heard. Who deserves the credit for the planning of the D-Day invasion?
There's a British captain who colonel who does that, and that plan is put together early on in 1942. They have to decide where they're going to land, and those landings could land in Norway. They could land in Normandy. They could land in another part of the Normandy Peninsula, further up near the port of Cherbourg. They have to capture a port at some point in order to get men in. This is really a battle not only of arms. This is a battle of logistics. It's not just men who are going to arrive on the beaches. It's going to be tons and tons of equipment, both vehicles, fighting vehicles, support vehicles, supplies, or will land at the Pas de Calais in the north of France. And the Pas de Calais is the part of France which is nearer to England, which is nearest to England, which is a shorter trip across the English Channel. Most of the Germans think that the invasion is going to come there. And, you know, this is to the north is where the fighting has been in the First World War. It's been where the fighting has been in the Second World War when the Germans come in and sweep through France and come to victory. It's very near to Dunkirk and where the British had to have that successful evacuation in 1940. So that's certainly a choice the Allies have to make. One of the key things is weather. The English Channel is very choppy. It can be horrible. So you have to pick out the right time to invade. The original date for D-Day was not June 6th. It was June 5th. And on June 4th, a British meteorologist, a Colonel James Stagg, asked to see Eisenhower and give him the bad news that the weather, and there had been like a three-day window, which would be the best time to come in early June. Actually, it was originally set for May. It had to be scrubbed for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons why it got scrubbed is so things could go wrong on D-Day. Things went wrong earlier in two big disasters for the Allies. The first of which was at a place called Dieppe in 1942. Dieppe is to the south, and it was something called Operation Jubilee, and it was designed to draw out the Luftwaffe and to practice a landing, to take a port, the port of Dieppe, to boost morale, and also to give the Canadians something to do. The Canadians had been sitting around in England since about 1940 and just sort of going stir crazy. And this was an absolute disaster. They lost about, they landed like 6,000 men and lost about 4,000. So things can go bad, and why? Insufficient naval bombardment, insufficient softening up from the air. The fighting was too tough within the city itself. So it's like, okay, maybe you don't want to land within a city. Maybe you want to land on beaches like Normandy. The plan was too rigid. It was like 100 pages long, and it was inflexible. So the Allies learned from that. But then even right before the invasion, a few months before that, they have some training exercises in the south of England. And at a place called Slapton Sands, they have 20,000 men practicing. 20,000 men just practicing in one place. And they are attacked by some German E-boats. And what happens is they lose 729 men. Wow. Just in a training exercise. This is covered up. This is covered up by the American government. Well, until
David,
1984.
Let me ask you to pause because we have to take a break. But if you don't mind sticking around, I want to ask you a little bit more about that aspect of this invasion, how it was kept secret and the lengths to which it was kept secret and the importance of secrecy in planning the D-Day invasion. We're talking with David Pietruzza, best-selling author and historian, one of my favorite historians, talking about D-Day, the 77th anniversary of D-Day yesterday. If you want to call in with questions, you can do so, 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I will tell you about one of my favorite law firms. That's the Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentili. If you've ever suffered a workplace injury or an occupational disease has turned your life upside down, you must call the Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentili. They'll get you paid while you're out of work. They'll get your work-related medical bills paid. The law firm of Angiuli and Gentili has been helping people like you for over 35 years. They'll help you take the fear out of the workers' compensation process. These are good folks who I know personally. They'll meet with you, listen to your concerns, and explain how all of this works for you. They'll get you the medical treatment and the workers' compensation payments you're entitled to. The lawyers at Angiuli and Gentili have handled thousands of hearings and will help you walk with confidence. Call Angiuli and Gentili today at 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-COMP. They offer both in-person consultations or contactless video appointments. That number again, 888-234-COMP, 888-234-2667.
The legal offerings mentioned in this ad are not a guarantee of services and or performance, as each case or matter is different and is judged on its own merits.
The 77 WABC mobile app. Download it now. Rudy Giuliani.
I want to talk about something right here.
Is on.
Affecting you and me.
America's mayor.
The mayor of New York City.
Is here to talk to you on the Tunnel to Towers Foundation Hotline. Weekdays at 3 p.m. Talk Radio 77 WABC and WABCRadio.com.
Sid here from Bernie and Sid in the Morning for Hamra Law Group. It's a law firm that you need to remember whether you're a business or an individual. That firm is Hamra Law Group. They're a group of award-winning attorneys. They're aggressive and client-centered in their approach to solving legal issues. Go to HamraLawGroup.com. Trust me, trust Sid, they are the best. Whether you need an attorney for a divorce, whether it's complex or not, or if you're a business looking to fight off a labor and employment lawsuit, or a business looking to get into compliance with New York and federal labor laws, there's only one firm I would turn to, and that's the Hamra Law Group PC. They're a results-driven law firm that really cares. They were built on the idea that sophisticated legal services should be convenient, modern, and affordable. Putting their clients first and knowing how to achieve a positive outcome, that's what you get with Hamra Law Group. If you need legal, you need Hamra. Visit them today at HamraLawGroup.com. That's H-A-M-R-A LawGroup.com. Win with Hamra today.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight, talking with one of my favorite historians, David Pietruzza, has written so many great books about history. 1960, all about the LBJ and JFK contest, and then the JFK-Nixon contest in the general election. 1920, the year of the six presidents. 1948, all about Harry Truman. TR's Last War, all about Theodore Roosevelt and his role in World War I. And his most recent book is Too Long Ago. I actually haven't read that one yet, but it's on my list. A Childhood Memory, A Vanished World, David Pietruzza. David, what is Too Long Ago about? Is that a personal memoir?
It is. It goes all the way up from my birth, and actually far before my birth, talking about the city where I grew up, Amsterdam, New York, which is, you know, upstate in the Mohawk Valley, one of the very early spots where the rust belt starts to rust. And the decay economically, manufacturing in the Northeast and in the United States starts to begin. And it's a tale of immigration, of the immigrant experience, in my case, Eastern European, Polish, about family, about growing up, and all the challenges that were faced then, and about what the world was like then in the 1950s, in the early 1960s. And, you know, it was very, very different from what people see now. And I want to explain it. I want to bring back memories for people who lived through it. I want to bring back, I want to talk to the people of today, the younger people of today, and even to the people who will follow us, and to put some things in context as to why we acted the way we did or didn't act the way we did.
Well, we're gonna have you back to talk about that book as soon as I read it, because I've been such a big fan of all of your other books. I have no doubt this is just as terrific. But we're talking about D-Day 1944, a turning point in the war, World War II, a turning point in human history. David, you talk about the secrecy of this mission. How difficult was that? How much of a challenge was that for the organizers of this invasion and the people participating in the invasion to keep it a secret?
Well, the big slogan on the home front was "Loose lips sink ships." So secrecy and censorship were the bywords in World War II, and people really respected that. So it was a little easier than it is now, where, you know, people would be tweeting about things, or, you know, whether they were true or false. And they would keep this secret, where you had so many Americans killed, in part to save morale, to keep morale up. Also, because it was a little further off the coast than from Calais, you know, might this have been a tip off even more to the Germans if you put this out, even though they had led the attack? Did they even know how big an exercise they were attacking? They knew what they did. They sunk some ships, but did they know the full measure of what was going on? And it was only revealed in 1984, not because the government comes out with it, because a British housewife in that area of Devon, England, says, hey, they took these guys and they dumped them in a mass grave, and what the hell was going on there? And then the New York Times investigated, and the government finally fessed up to it. So, I mean, things were, I think, after the war, things kind of moved on. During the war, things were still being kept secret. And then there was just sort of an inertia to government secrecy.
800-848-9222. A lot of people may have questions for David Pietruzza. 1-800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Mark in North Carolina. Good morning, Mark.
Yes, good morning. One of my good friends, who's now deceased, was a young lieutenant on the staff of Teddy Roosevelt Jr., Clapton Sands, and he told me of an encounter he had with him. The only time he really interacted with him personally, they were observing the exercises before everything went bad, and it had started to rain. And so a senior officer told my friend, he said, it's raining, and General Roosevelt doesn't have a rain poncho, and you have an extra one. Go up there and offer it to him. So he went up there, and Roosevelt was peering through his, you know, glasses at the exercises, and he said, excuse me, General, he said, but I have an extra rain poncho for you. And he said he put down his binoculars from, you know, looking out to see, and his lips were very purple, of course, because he said he had very poor circulation. He was, I think, around 56 years old at the time, mm-hmm. Roosevelt was.
Exactly. At D-Day he was, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and so he had always had, you know, problems with arthritis and stuff too, so he walked with a cane. And he told my friend, he said, Lieutenant, he said, I didn't join this war to be comfortable, son, and went back to watching the exercise. So I just thought that was a really amazing anecdote. Now, my friend, he landed at a D+6 and took his unit up into the hedgerows. They were fighting in the hedgerows at that time. And he told me a lot of the German snipers were laying low in the hedgerows, and they shot him in the leg. They would look for officers, you know, the snipers, and he showed me where the Mauser bullet hit him in the leg, so it was quite a wound, and he was not able to rejoin, you know, for several months. But I thought you would enjoy hearing that story, because as far as I know, I'm one of the few people that knows it, and now a lot of people do.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Mark.
What a great call.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Where do I start in commenting on that? Let's put it in three parts. One is Theodore Roosevelt Jr. Theodore Roosevelt Jr. had fought in France in World War I and was badly wounded in battles there. A brother of his, Quentin was killed. And another brother was very wounded, more so than Teddy Jr. And then he went off and was ran for governor of New York at one point, was undersecretary of the Navy, governor general of the Puerto Rico, and then of the Philippines, came back into active duty in World War II. And again, as the caller said very accurately, he was bothered by arthritis, walked with a cane, really had to beg to go on to the beach to land with his men. His commander, who gave the approvals, did, and thought, wow, I am never going to see General Roosevelt again. He's not coming back. I mean, they didn't know how bad the losses were going to be, and as your caller said, T.R. Jr. was not in particularly great shape, but he lands on Utah Beach, which is the widest of the beaches. It's fairly lightly defended. It's not as bloody as bloody Omaha Beach by any measure, but the fighting is tough. And the tides, the weather, as we were talking about earlier, the tides would play havoc with the scheduling of the landings and where people would land. It would just sort of blow them over. And T.R. Jr. and his people are a mile off from where they're supposed to be. So he's on the beach, and he's looking up, and he sees this house on the beach, and it's like, hey, that's not supposed to be there. Nothing's right. It's like, holy cow, we're in the wrong place. What do we do? Do we march back to where we're supposed to be? Remember what I said about Dieppe, okay, how it's like they were inflexible. So Roosevelt decides, we're going to be flexible, and he famously says, or maybe not, maybe it was his assistant or one of his underlings who claims later on that he said it, but the quote from Roosevelt is, supposedly, the war starts from here. And what he did was he was very calm during the fighting, and he is directing traffic with his cane, sort of saying, you go here, you go there. He's an incredibly brave man in both wars. He's praised for that by Patton, and he's praised by that for Bradley, neither of whom, by the way, think he's a particularly good general or a commander. In fact, he's removed from a command at one point in the war before that, with the concurrence of Bradley. But both of them say this, that he is one of the bravest guys they ever met.
We're gonna take
He dies a few weeks after that from a heart attack. He had suffered from pneumonia around this time, and then he has a heart attack and dies. His son serves on Omaha Beach, the next American beach over.
That, it's incredible, all those Roosevelts involved. FDR is the commander-in-chief, and then T.R. Jr., a general, and his son serving as part of the same invasion. That's wild. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue with your calls in just a minute. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Well, if you want to do something good for your own health, if you want to have greater energy and better digestion, then let me tell you about a product called Life Change Tea. You go to the website getthetea.com and you will be able to order the tea that makes you go. It's a cold tea, perfect for nice hot summer days like this. Nice ice cold glass of tea that is blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. It tastes terrific. There's no fillers. There's no GMOs. It's completely organic. And it's a mild cleanse. A daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is, the tea that makes you go. Check out the reviews at getthetea.com. Again, the website is getthetea.com. When you order, if you use the promo code Frank at getthetea.com, you'll be able to save some money on shipping. In fact, you'll get to enjoy free shipping. So you get a great product at a great price. It gives you energy. It helps your digestive process. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
The power of information at your fingertips. Download the 77 WABC mobile app now.
Gold and silver prices are at an all-time high. If you have any gold, silver, or platinum coins, bullion, Franklin Mint items, diamonds, jewelry, art, antiques, paintings, French furniture, any Tiffany items, sterling flatware, Judaica, oriental rugs, older baseball cards, sport and entertainment memorabilia, watches, especially better watches, such as Rolex, Patek Philippe, Vacheron, Tiffany, IWC, Cartier, Breguet, Omega, Breitling, and Bulgari, just to name a few. They will buy them at all the highest cash prices, in any condition, even broken. They also need any designer jewelry such as Cartier, Tiffany, Buccellati, Van Cleef, Harry Winston, and Bulgari. Now is the time to cash out at the world-famous APR 57 Gallery on 57th Street in New York City across from Carnegie Hall. They can also come to your home and do certified insurance appraisals. So if you have anything of value, call them for a free appraisal and high cash offer at 212-246-2000. That's 212-246-2000. Or toll free at 800-772-0054.
If you need a new car and have bad credit, Hudson Hyundai can help. Call Hudson Hyundai at 800-721-8538. Tier 1 customers can drive a new Hyundai with just $68 down. They're loaded with inventory. Over 850 vehicles in stock. 800-721-8538. Like a Hyundai Tucson, only $68 down. The Hyundai Santa Fe, $68 down. Even a Hyundai Palisade, $68 down. Call 800-721-8538. Don't get tricked into paying more. They've got plenty of inventory and plenty of discounts. 800-721-8538. Over 850 vehicles in stock. Call 800-721-8538. All new Hyundais come with Hyundai Assurance and America's best 10-year 100,000-mile warranty. Drive now with just $68 down. They're loaded with inventory. Over 850 vehicles in stock. 800-721-8538 or HudsonHyundai.com. Payments will vary. Credit severity affects approval terms. See dealer for details.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Yesterday was the 77th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. We're talking with one of my favorite historians and authors, David Pietruzza. I highly recommend all of his books, whatever aspect of American history you're interested in, particularly in the 20th century, chances are he's written a book which fits the bill. His newest book is called Too Long Ago, A Childhood Memory of Vanished World. You can get it wherever books are available. David, before we go back to the callers, just go back to the secrecy aspect of things. I had read somewhere that one of the things they did was they had the BBC do an appeal for photographs to members of the public, but they couldn't actually tell the public what these photographs were for. Are you familiar with that? What exactly was that?
Yeah, it was photographs and it was postcards, and they eventually got 10 million replies, or just descriptions of the French beaches. Now, you know, everyone knew there was going to be a landing. Hitler knew there was going to be a landing. Rommel knew. You know, it was, in a way, that was the worst kept secret of the war. But of course, it was going to be where. And so they had to get every little detail right of what was on those beaches. What were the houses on the front and on the shorefront? Now the Germans got rid of some of them. They converted some of them into fortifications. All of those things were changed. Now they took a huge number of aerial photos at various times of day, to then do something without the aid of computers to calculate simply what the gradient of the beach of the shore would be at certain times of day. They had a couple of commandos go in and land on the beaches, then come back out with samples of the soil. What's the soil going to be like? What is it going to comprise? Are you going to get stuck on the soil? They designed various types of tanks with flotation devices. One was called a Donald Duck. They called these tanks Hobart's Funnies because they had all these attachments to them, like flotation devices. They didn't want them sinking in the land. And a lot of our tanks sank before they got on shore, and the men didn't have the firepower support. It was very bad. Or because of the mines, they would have these big flailing chains in front of the tank, which, you know, just sort of beat the mine and then have it explode in front of you instead of under you. These hedgerows that were being referenced by your caller, what were those? Were those just bushes? What was so hard about them? Well, they weren't really bushes. They were mounds of dirt, and our tanks would get stuck on that. That was one of the surprises that we faced. We planned a lot of stuff. We couldn't plan anything. But there was a sergeant in the field who took some of the junked German barriers on the beach called Czech hedgehogs, and they welded them onto the beginning, to the front of our tanks, and made basically plows out of them to get rid of those earthen mounds. So all of those things. And snipers, what your caller was talking about. Another one of the very famous people who was at D-Day, and there were, you know, Yogi Berra was on one of the ships, but was a fellow named a Canadian on Juno, the Canadian beach, called Lieutenant James Doohan. Okay, so who's what's so famous?
Scotty,
about him?
Scotty for the Canadian
exactly.
Army. Yes, absolutely.
That's
he
right.
lost his finger in that battle.
He did. You know the score.
Absolutely, I know my Star Trek, David.
He killed two German snipers. Okay. And his life was saved because a bullet hits his cigarette case. Smoking is good for you.
It's incredible. It's funny. In his autobiography, there's a great chapter about his experience at D-Day, and he calls it, because he lost his finger there, he calls it, "I gave Hitler the finger." And and there's one Star Trek episode, it's called The Trouble with Tribbles, where you see Scotty holding these furry little creatures, Tribbles, and you see very clearly, and it's the only episode of Star Trek where this is visible, that he absolutely is missing a finger. But a lot of people very eager to comment and talk with you. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Roy in Rye, New York. Roy, you're on with David Pietruzza.
Hey, thanks, David. I love the topic, and I really applaud you for having, you know, a historian of this stature on, especially since I don't think that, you know, June 6th never gets enough attention in my money, and it certainly didn't again this year. But two topics that have come up that I'd like to just hear more about, maybe expand on a bit, are both lessons and logistics. We talked about the lessons learned from, you know, slapped in sands, if they were learned, or from Dieppe. And if you think about what had already gone on, I mean, seaborne invasions, you know, were not a new thing at that point. But this was going to be, you know, different in scale and in nature than anything we had done. I mean, when we went into North Africa, really, the first hostiles we encountered were the Vichy French. But even in those landings, we still had all kinds of crafts get swamped, there were all kinds of coordination problems, and
problems
there was
at Casablanca. Really, sure, Eisenhower was worried about that.
And the lesson from the Pacific didn't translate all that terrifically well, because they weren't, you know, they didn't need, you know, the logistical support, you know, or the operating tempo to actually, you know, to actually have a, you know, a 1,000-mile vision in terms of where they were going to go. They went to Tarawa, you know, or Bougainville. You know, those places were, you know, the size of a large farm compared to going into France, right? Or, and you also at Dieppe, they encountered, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of what they encountered in the earliest stages were one of their areas that they had to operate in had cliffs. And that wasn't something that they were terrifically good at dealing with. And we learned a bit about that by the time that, right, by the time that we went into Omaha, where the Rangers had to deal with that, you know, for
Point du Hoc is the famous situation there, and that's where Reagan gives his speech in Normandy and talks about the boys at Point du Hoc. But they have to scale a 100-foot cliff, shoot these rappelling devices up there, all sorts of ropes and ladders, and go up that cliff while the Germans are shooting down at them. And it's key why they have to do that. They have to do that because this is a point of land which sticks out into the English Channel right between our two American beaches, and it has six big artillery pieces on it, and it can be absolutely deadly in taking out ships or men at the beach. It has to be taken out. But as much as we spend time, talk about the great Allied deceptions of this operation, the one German deception I found out about was at Point du Hoc, where they had removed the guns. And our aerial reconnaissance was simply looking at the telephone poles painted black.
Wow.
And they had moved those guns. But the Allies, our guys, our command, our Rangers, had practice on cliffs that were 200 and 300 feet high. They were, you know, very tough guys, and they were prepared, and they were raring to go, even though they took tremendous casualties right at the first moments and all the way through. And then they find these six guns, they destroy them, they blow them up with grenades, they ruin the sights, but then they are the Germans counterattack them. They fight them off. There, a couple days later, Allied forces finally catch up to them, but they're in trouble. They've run out of supplies. They've run out of rations. They've run out of ammunition. They're using German guns and ammunition that they've captured. But what this does is it creates another problem, because when our guys hear firing from these German guns, they know the sound. They know it's not the sound of American guns, and the Americans start firing on them.
Wow. My final question, well, let me squeeze in one more call here at least, and then I have one more question, then we're going to have to wrap up. Let me say hello to Peter on Long Island. Peter, what's your question for David Pietruzza?
Where was General Rommel on D-Day? And did his absence affect the outcome of D-Day?
He was in transit. D-Day was his wife's birthday. And because the weather was off, because the weather was going to be so bad, the Germans thought, well, we can kind of stretch out and relax. And a lot of generals take leave, officers take leave, they go back for conferences. Rommel goes back to Germany, and his absence is, he doesn't get the word right away. He gets the word that there's been these landings, these commando landings behind enemy lines, but he doesn't, the message gets lost. You know, it's telephone, and things get garbled and lost. And they don't tell him about the beach landing. So he doesn't get the message. He discounts it at first. He doesn't think it's any big thing. It could just be one of these diversionary feints. And one of the things that the Germans are deceived about is they think we have twice as many troops in Britain, on the British Isles, than we do. So even if we land a bunch of guys in Normandy, they think there's even going to be more guys commanded by General George Patton landing at the Pas de Calais. By the time Rommel figures this out around noon, he says, "What a fool I have been," and he wants all the tanks and wow. such landed on rushing towards the beach. But then at that point, because the weather is clearing, we've got this tremendous air support where they only had like 160 planes operational in all of France, and we're pounding them with literally thousands of planes. So they can't move their tanks up to kill us, to get our guys to drive us off the beach during the day. They have to move by night. Again, precious hours lost.
David, we're actually going to have to end it there, but if people are interested in learning more about your World War II scholarship, of the many books you've written, what would you suggest the best book that people pick up if they're interested in World War II is?
Well, I don't know, but it's such a big topic. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this. You can get it on eBay, okay? You get some used copies, and they only go for a few bucks. I won't make any money off it. But I wrote a little book for younger readers not little kids, but, you know, high school and such, junior high, called The Invasion of Germany. And there's a hell of a lot of data in it. Easy to read, and the people who laid it out a few years back did a beautiful job with maps and photographs. So to get the big picture and quick, I'd say go to the source, me.
I concur. David Piatruzza, you could check out his website. You can Google him, or you could just go to David PIETRUSZA.com. If you get anything close to that, though, in Google, his website comes up. David SZA.com. David, it is always a treat to talk with you, my friend. I'll look forward to having you back to talk about your latest book sometime soon.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame next. Be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. That's 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. 15 seconds of fame. Meantime, want to tell you about how you can be pain-free. Back pain, neck pain, knee pain, plantar fasciitis. You don't need any of those anymore. Well, you never need any of them, but you don't need to continue to suffer with them. Tennis elbow, frozen shoulder, whatever the case may be, if you are in chronic pain, then the good folks at Trinity Rehab are your gateway to a pain-free life. It's not going to take any drugs. It's not going to take a surgery. It's not even going to take a lot of time. It's going to take 3 5-minute sessions with something called the EPAP machine. The EPAP machine uses non-surgical acoustic pressure wave technology. They zap you with this thing 3 times for 5 minutes each, and you're virtually pain-free. No prescription needed to get started. Call Trinity Rehab. They have locations all over New Jersey. Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, Woodbridge, New Jersey. Call them today, 800-518-0977. That's 800-518-0977, or go to trinity-rehab.com.
Entertaining and informative. Enable the 77 WABC Alexa skill today.
Play 77 WABC.
The perfect gift for Father's Day. An international thriller with elements of romance and detective novels. Years after the death of his gangster father, a young man defies the mob while searching for hidden treasure. Read the international suspense thriller, a detective novel from Jeffrey S. Stevens, Fool's Errand. A perfect gift for Father's Day. New York Trend exclaims Fool's Errand is poignant and entertaining, humorous and exciting, romantic and mysterious, an adventure that explores the relationship between a father and son and the events that will ultimately lead that young man to discover both the treasure and himself. Diane Taylor from Living Las Vegas exclaims, "The book was just pure pleasure. And as readers of this column know, not typically drawn to novels, but Fool's Errand is definitely an exception. Read the international suspense thriller, a detective novel from Jeffrey S. Stevens, Fool's Errand. The perfect gift for Father's Day. Available wherever books are sold."
Radio 77 WABC. Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Andrew Cuomo, his mea culpa, if you will. And I thought what you said to me, hey, congratulations to Andrew. He finally earned his Emmy Award.
That's right. People have been saying, return the Emmy. And at this point, I say scratch that. Because he earned it yesterday.
He's just crying. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. I'm so ashamed.
Bernie and Sid in the morning. Weekdays, 6:30 to 10. Listen on the 77 WABC mobile app. This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Oh, no lie.
Well, we're going to get to 15 seconds of fame in just a minute. 1-800-848-9222. Be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. Four open lines. You can jump on board now. But meantime, look what the cat dragged in, returning to where his rightful place behind the microphone. The guy that we've missed. Actually, I've missed him much more than I expected I would over the course of the last week. Sid Rosenberg is back, looking tan, rested, and ready.
I feel great. The feeling is mutual. We had a station event last night. You weren't there. The first thing I said was, man, I really missed you last night, and I did miss you last week as well. So it's great to see you, and it's good to be back. It's not great to be back. It's good to be back.
How was your vacation?
It was great. That's why it's only good to be back.
Got it. So you guys had fun.
We had a magnificent time. We went to a place. You know, I left here on Friday, Memorial Day weekend. It was miserable here, raining and cold. I know you guys had a washout. When I landed at my destination, it was 84 and sunny. So, and that never changed for seven consecutive days. It was really beautiful.
Wonderful. It's good to have you back.
Nice to be back.
You hear Sid Rosenberg on the WABC Early News. He's going to give us a sports update.
Yeah, I don't want to cut into the time for that jerk off who calls every morning and says, F Sid.
That's right.
Who would never show up outside the studio and send it to my face. So make sure that guy gets on today.
Absolutely. We're going to ask Sid about this boxing match that happened yesterday, more highlights of his vacation, and a whole lot more. It's coming up at the WABC Early News, where Sid does the sports at 15 and 45 after the hour. Meantime, 800-848-9222. It's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Larry on Long Island. Hello.
D-Day 1944. They fought Hitler's National Socialists for freedom and liberty, not for progressive oppression in America or Europe. Freedom and liberty, not socialism.
Russell and White Plains, hello.
It didn't take two nukes to convince Japan to surrender. The Soviet Union was marching down the peninsula. Those two nukes were the worst atrocity in history for geopolitical advantage. Truman's bones should be dug up and burned.
Neil on Staten Island.
When you finally have your first kid, do not ask for naming help from the Borellis unless you want the name to start with the letter J.
All right. Ed in New Hampshire.
Hi, Frank. Great show.
Thank you.
Say his name. W. Allen B. Combs. Radio Graffiti. We want the Floridories. We want the Floridories.
Jim on Long Island.
Yeah, tell Juliet there was no attempt at overthrowing January 6th. People who want to overthrow the government don't come in without arms. Tell her she sounds like the fool she is.
Mark in New Haven.
Hey, Frank. So I was listening to the Memorial Show rerun about the guy with the extraterrestrials. Changed my mind about it a little bit, but I didn't call and talk about that. Henny Youngman talked about the drunk who got hauled into court. And the judge said, young man, you were brought here for drinking. The guy goes, okay, Your Honor, let's get started.
Anthony and Edison.
After the day goes by, I don't appreciate the sacrifice that was made by the last great generation. And it's a shame what those idiots, Democrats, and Sleepy Joe and the rest of these election thieves are doing to this country. They don't deserve to reap the rewards of it.
Thank you, JC. Hello.
See you tomorrow.
Rich in East Meadow.
Good morning, Frank. Welcome back, Sid. Cuomo, you're a putz. You've already lost. Belmont Park is a disgrace. Vaccinated, unvaccinated, you did not ask for one COVID vaccination ID.
Thank you. Peter, hello.
Yes, Frank, this is addressed to you. Would today's high-spirited anti-war activists have a legitimate argument against America entering World War II simply because Hitler had no plans of invading the USA?
I am not going to answer that right now, but I will in the future. We're out of time. Whoa, a lot of show. Happy Monday, everybody. We're just getting started. The WABC Early News is next. Juliette Huddy's got the news. She and I have 90 minutes worth of headlines. Sid Rosenberg returning with sports. We have Joe Nolan with traffic. I've got business. A whole lot of news coming your way for the next 90 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Turn your radio up and bring a friend. To be continued.
1071 WLIR-FM Hampton Bays and 77 WABC New York. From around the world.